The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio. Keep your mission on your mind, and your mind on your mission. This is Mission Minded with Michael Coleman.
Welcome to another week right here on TKR. Download that TKR app. Over 100,000 folks have already done that. You get great classic rock and roll. We have 14 different shows, and of course, we're adding shows almost monthly right now on Tony Curry Radio. One of my favorite shows is called Mission Minded with Michael Coleman from Montgomery Area Food Bank. We have a 15th show coming up exclusively about the Montgomery Food Bank. We'll get into that a little bit later on in June and maybe perhaps July. But Michael joins us right now, MAFB.org. This is a show called Mission Minded. Keep your mind, your mission on your mind. How is the summer treating Michael Coleman right now, brother?
It's already too hot for me. I'm ready for the I love the summer, but man, this heat down here and this humidity, it'll kill you every year.
So I'm going to jump right into it because I just stopped by my local Winn-Dixie down the street. I'm a Publix guy, but there's a Winn-Dixie closer, and I was hankering for a watermelon last night. Watermelons are really good right now. What kind of different foods, and I realize you can get watermelons year-round, but they come from different parts of the world because of our climates, but what is the food at the Montgomery Food Bank? How does it change in the summertime? I would think that you get a lot more fruits. I would think that maybe it's a little even healthier than it is maybe during other times of the season for the Montgomery Food Bank. Can you kind of explain? And how do you deal with fresh produce? I've walked through your facility, and I've seen how you keep things fresh and ripe, but how does that change?
Oh, it's a huge challenge. One of the things that we do is there's a USDA program that most states have the USDA buys it from local farmers and they don't send it through the stores. They distribute it right to the food bank. But things like dairy and produce, things that just have a lifespan that's not very long. It's really a challenge to make sure, because the worst thing in the world for me is to have anything unnecessarily go to waste. Sometimes we'll pick up a donation and that produce has maybe 2 days of life left on it, and you pick up too much then you could distribute it. But stuff we get from the USDA straight from the farmers usually has a couple of weeks at least. And that's what we really want, is to get out as much fresh produce as possible. This time of year where you start getting a lot of crops, we have a lot of local peach farmers, strawberry farmers, all that kind of stuff. Yeah, it starts coming in for the next couple of months. So we'll have lots of produce to distribute. But then we also have a couple of months coming out of the wintertime where there's not as much in stock. And you'll have some imported in from around the world, but you just don't have the same amount. And so it's just something we just have to communicate to people and just say, hey, we're going to be down. We can't distribute what we don't have. And we just know there's going to be downtime for that, for fresh produce. So we try to supplement that maybe with the canned fruits and vegetables, and to try to make up the difference in that. But yeah, it's a challenge all the time.
All right. We have several emails, info@tonycurryradio.net. We want to get into our topic here, overcoming the five dysfunctions of a team, which, by the way, is also a book, a field guide for leaders, managers, and facilitators. That came out the last couple of years. So we'll talk about that in a second. Can we answer an email real quick, though?
Yeah, absolutely.
Vic in Virginia Beach, former military, suffers from PTSD. He said, what's Michael's take on hiring veterans and former military? Are there pros and cons, or is it all pros?
I'll tell you, it's not all pros. And as the audience knows, or most know, that I spent 21 years in the military, love the armed services. I will tell you, it's pretty interesting. We are right here in Montgomery, right next to an air base. And so we'll have sometimes, 60 airmen want to come out and volunteer. And so I tell our staff, listen, I tell our warehouse people, hey, these are 60 airmen. Here's what you want to do. You want to show them what we have. You want to just tell them, here's what we want to be. And then you just need to get out of their way, because these are people who are used to taking charge, problem solving, creating a distribution system and figuring out how to pack those boxes or do whatever you need to. So most people know that when you come from the military, you have the ability, what discipline is, how to work in a disciplined environment, to have high expectations, to be accountable. There's so many things that go into having a military background that's why so many people, I think, want to hire veterans, is because you just come with a certain amount, even if you can't put it down on paper, you just know, having been through the military, you've experienced some true discipline in your life. And that's a plus for so many people. I mean, so many employers just begging for people to show up and frankly, just to give a damn about how good of a job you're doing. And so that is something that's just gets ingrained in you, especially over time in the military. But I will tell you there are downsides, and you mentioned specifically the PTSD. And of course that's being talked about more and more. I actually had a young man come to me asking for a job. This guy's incredibly smart. He was very honest up front. Said, "Hey, I've got some PTSD, and I don't know how well I'll do. And would you just start me off as a janitor?" Wow. And I'm like, absolutely. And so he comes in, and he's just, I mean, every time, I never caught him slacking. Every time I'd go out in the warehouse and he'd be wiping down the rails. I mean, I could never catch this guy slacking off. But he was so smart and he was personable. And so I was trying to be very sensitive. And I didn't even ask him what the source of the PTSD was. It from things that he saw? Was he shot? I mean, you just don't know how wartime and the effects of war affect an individual. But I ended up asking him, okay, look, you obviously are way more qualified than what I have you doing. Would you be interested in trying this? And he said, yes, absolutely. And he's done a fantastic job. Now, he does not have, you know, I can tell when he gets under pressure that he struggles with that. But that's okay. Because going all the way back, tying it back to the five dysfunctions of a team, at the very bottom of that is the absence of trust. Yep. So when you build a safe environment, and that's what I try to do, is say, look, I'm going to be vulnerable with you. I'm going to admit when I make mistakes. I'm going to show you. I will use myself and my mistakes as an example. But I'm going to communicate that with you, and hopefully you know that it's safe to communicate that back to me, so that when he has, when he starts to allow pressure to build up on him, and I know given his background because of what he shared with me, then I'm free to go in his office, put my arm around him and say, hey, man, I appreciate you, I value you, you're doing great, and take some of that off of him. I will tell you, though, besides that specific thing, the most thing that I've seen that's a problem with military is very much type A person. There can be type A personalities, and it's my way or the highway.
Yeah.
And when they come in, there have been times to where they struggle to adapt to doing something another person's way, especially if they feel like, well, I already know how to do this. I think this is not the best way. And so working within that team environment to where they're having to set aside what they think is right, that can be problematic. But I will tell you, the pros far outweigh the cons when it comes to hiring previous military.
He is Michael Coleman. He is, of course, the CEO of the Montgomery Area Food Bank, MAFB.org. He joins us every single week, a show you can hear at least five times on the TKR app. And, of course, wherever you get your podcast, we're available on every major industry, and we're working on some new outlets for those as well to be heard even further. So check out Mission Minded with Michael Coleman right here on Tony Curry Radio. One last email. We have a ton of them. We'll take them every single week, but we want to get into our five dysfunctions of teams, and this is from Stacy in Hueytown. It is LGBTQ month. She said, what are Michael's thoughts on the recent Target and Budweiser boycotts and the potential stock trader class action suit against those two companies? Of course, Target was actually targeting transgender individuals by having some type of swimsuit with a tuck mechanism on it. Someone found it, put it online, it went viral, and now they've moved it to the back of the store, and now, of course, they've taken it off the shelves. Target has lost somewhat like 20% of their value. And then, of course, Budweiser, in celebration of a transgender athlete, sending her a can of beer to celebrate her 365th day as a transgender or identifying as transgender, and they've lost 30% of their market share. It's amazing to me, Michael, first of all, just from a business standpoint, because we always say, you know, vote with your feet. If you don't like something, stop buying it. And it's just incredible because Major League Baseball celebrates transgenders and LGBTQ, and they're not affected by that so much. And I know there's some people that like to stand outside and boycott baseball teams because of that. But for the most part, it's business as usual. And it really is interesting to see which businesses are targeted more than others when they try to be ultra inclusive to everything. And I think they're trying to do the right thing, but it backfires. So first of all, just kind of give me your general thoughts on what's going on with Target and Budweiser. And then I want to have you ask you a follow-up question.
Yeah, I think we've talked about this a little, maybe a little on the air, but certainly off the air. And, you know, one of the things I hate about the boycotts, especially like with the Budweiser, is that it affects people other than it's intended to affect. Yes. So you have local distributors who talk about, hey, I can't get anybody to buy this beer. I might have to lay people off. So there's people losing their jobs. And so I'm not saying from Anheuser-Busch company and their stock market loss. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about when you boil it down to the individuals that are affected by the boycott, those are some collateral damage that takes place, and I hate it for them. But flipping it to the, you know, lots of times companies, and we've talked about this, like as a nonprofit, should you take a stand, whether it be on any social issue or any cultural issue. You know, the issue is, what do you want your company to represent, and how do you best represent that? And so I think sometimes whatever the latest trend is or whatever is the latest popularity is, companies want to show, oh yeah, I'm inclusive, and they do that. And then when they do that, they get backlash, and then you see them retreating. And here's my question. You know, if you want to be pro LGBTQ, all right, regardless of where you stand on, then be pro and say, this is what we're going to do. And this is who we want to be as a company. And then if you lose 30% of your company, you go, okay, well, that's fine. This is who we are. I struggle with companies who think it's going to be great and get a lot of buzz marketing wise. And then as soon as they get backlash, they go retreating. Cause I'm like, well, did your values all of a sudden change?
You know, and back up, what did you just say there? You said when people believe they're going to get a lot of buzz marketing wise. And that's where I think that if you're sitting in a boardroom, you're going, hey, listen, we have this idea. Let's discuss what's going to happen when we do these things. Why do you think that Target did this? Are they trying to be more inclusive, or are they trying to cause a splash in the LGBTQ community so they can sell more? I mean, this is a business. You do what helps your bottom line, correct?
Right. And so there, I don't believe that Target, I believe that when they went into these things, that they think it's a net gain.
Yes.
I don't think any company, or I don't think Target is sitting up there going, this is such an important issue we feel so strongly about. We're going to put it up there, and to hell with the bottom line. If we lose 10, 20, 30%, so be it. And you know that because as soon as they got a backlash, then they retreated and then changed. And I'm like, well, your values didn't change. And so, you know, I'm all for companies. You know, if a company says, hey, this is who we want to be, and this is what. So let's say Chick-fil-A. I'm going to use them as a great example. So Chick-fil-A was labeled as being anti-LGBTQ because they have a biblical perspective of marriage, one man, one woman. They didn't shy away from that, but they tried to be very careful and say that everybody's welcome at their restaurants. They're not judging anybody. I went on recently went on Chick-fil-A's website and looked at their statement of equality, and they hire people who are in the LGBT community. They are they're not anti, but those are just not. They just want to treat everybody equally. And so you have a company or you have a group that comes along and starts exerting social pressure to companies to say, no, 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 that's not enough that you're not anti us. You have to be pro us. And so companies go, okay, we're going to show we're pro you. And then the people out there in the world who may have a different either political view or social view or don't want something thrown in their face that they don't particularly value, well, then they make decisions and then the company has to suffer the ramifications of it. I don't think, going all the way back to the beginning, the problem is I don't think they're sitting in a boardroom going, oh, you know what, this is a value. We want to be pro-LGBTQ and so we're going to do it the right way. And then if we take backlash for it, then so what? Because if it's a value, how does that value begin to change or how you promote that value just because you've got some negative publicity coming back? Because you were all for it when you thought it was going to be positive.
No, and I got to be honest with you. I have a lot more respect for a business that would do something like this that sticks to its guns and keeps it on the front rack than opposed to, I mean, I don't know what this says about Target, because if they did it for a market value and they did it because of the LGBTQ community, and now they don't even sell their stuff anymore, or transgender, whatever it was, then I don't know what that says about your particular business. And, you know, I think you were spot on the Budweiser thing, because they're franchised out and you had the national brand or the international brand putting something out that didn't affect, you know, Harpersville Budweiser, Birmingham Budweiser, Knoxville Budweiser, and they're paying the price for that. So
that's
Yeah, it's just really interesting though. But it's to lose 20 or 30% of your stock market price based on something like this is really amazing. It really is.
And going back to the Chick-fil-A thing, look, whether you're pro Chick-fil-A, I mean, I like Chick-fil-A's food, and I think they're not pro or anti. They just say this is our value system. But they're a company who believes what they believe. They state it very clearly what they believe, and then they back it up. And so, you know, if people choose not to and I'm sure that they've taken some hits as people have protested against them, especially at certain cities and certain locations. But they just said, well, this is who we are. And then we just trust that, you know, we're going to be in business representing who we are and being kind to all people.
Yeah.
And that's just the antithesis of what you see both from Anheuser-Busch and you see Target, which were rolling it out, trying to get a bunch of momentum, trying to be cool, trying to connect. And a matter of fact, you heard the marketing person even stated that the reason she was doing that was because, you know, the Bud had become like a frat brand, and she was trying to move that out of a frat house mentality into something different. And so she was given the authority to do that by whoever, we don't know. But, you know, so then the question is, what exactly is Budweiser's values? What exactly are Target's values? Because now they're all over the place and these whole campaigns have blown up in their face.
I think it's really interesting, too. It's a brand new campaign that started last week, but Budweiser's teamed up with Harley Davidson. They now have the Harley Davidson Budweiser cans. And I'm like, talk about going from one direction to the next.
Well, Harley Davidson's probably laughing all the way to the bank because they're like, it's not going to have any effect. But if you want to promote Harley Davidson and pay us a bunch of money to do it, then by all means, go ahead.
And I'm hoping this Harley Davidson promotion was something that's been in the till for quite some time. And that wasn't something they're like, okay, quick guys, what can we do to look badass again with Budweiser?
It looks very reactionary.
info@TonyCurryRadio.net. Send your emails. We'll read them every single week here. This is Mission Minded. Keep your mind your mission. Your mission, your mind. He's Michael Coleman, the CEO of the Montgomery Area Food Bank, MAFB.org. We'll get into some more stuff they do. And of course, we have a brand new show starting a little bit later on this summer. Overcoming the five dysfunctions of a team. This has been the center of a book. It's got its own Wikipedia page. I had never heard of it before, but tell me what those five dysfunctions are and why did you want to get into it?
Yeah, because I just think it's so vital because, you know, I've said this over and over and over, is especially in the nonprofit world, is we do, nonprofits are typically not run with the same urgency and efficiencies as that for-profit businesses are because you know, we tend to just go in and go, okay, I can raise this amount of money. I can do these amount of services. And we just cycle it over year after year. And, but if it was paychecks and all that, and you're like, hey, I want to squeeze more juice out of this, then I need to have a functioning team. I need to make sure that we're more effective, we're more efficient, that we're dealing all this. And so these kind of things really matter. And so when I just start at the bottom of this pyramid, I'll just go through them just real quick and just kind of throw some stuff in there. Please jump in, Tony, with your thoughts. But
sure,
man, one of the things I see all the time is as I mentioned earlier on the show, this absence of trust. When people come in, you can pit departments against each other. You can pit management versus employees. There's all sorts of things, but that, to me, that comes right from the top. Is I want to be transparent in everything we do, and that means I've got to be transparent with the wins and the losses, and then invite people to be transparent to me. And so it's very important when somebody opens up to me about something they're doing or something that's going on in their life, is that that person becomes the priority to me. So when, for instance, if I come in and I see somebody who just looks down and I go, hey, how's it going? And they go, it's okay. Well, if I go, okay, good, and I keep walking, I've just conveyed a message to them that, yeah, you know, I'm really not interested. But if I sat down and said, no, come here and talk to me for a second. Tell me what's going on. And just give them a safe environment to talk about, hey, well, my boss is, you know, these different things are happening, or I'm really concerned about this, or it could be something going on in their own life. But you build, when you build trust, that is a foundation where everything else comes from, because they believe in you and you believe in them. And that's just really solid right from the very beginning.
All right. So the five dysfunctions, and again, their absence of trust, a fear of conflict, lack of commitment, avoidance of accountability, and the inattention to team results. Is there one in particular that you find? And I realized there in the piece that I saw, it was actually a kind of a pyramid. All five of them obviously are very, very important, but is there one that's more important than the others?
Well, I would say it's stacked pretty well. But I will tell you this, I'll give you a good example of the fear of conflict. And it was really, I would say it was very descriptive of me for a while. When I started another nonprofit and I ran it for 7 years, I had somebody who had lots of issues that was helping me along the way. And then some other people came along, and there began to be some struggles, like hierarchy, like who's the there were, and it was mostly females. And in this particular instance, it was like, who's the female in charge kind of thing. And like, everybody knew I was the CEO, but who was, so you had kind of these internal struggles. And the truth of the matter is I should have been much clearer with boundaries. I should have sat down and had real conversations and diffused a lot of that. But at times I didn't want to confront problems because I didn't want to confront those problems because I was confronting other issues. And so I left them fester. And when I left, the guy that replaced me, I called him one day and I said, listen, here's the reality is I left you some issues there and I owe you an apology because I should have dealt with those. I should have bitten the bullet and dealt with those. But in part because, I mean, I didn't do it in part because I had crossed some boundaries and had become friends with employees to the point that it kept me from making tougher decisions about their future. And so I've really learned to not do that. I can be friendly with people. I can even be friends with them. But I really try my best to be very clear and hold everybody to the same standard, and both in their evaluations and in my inner workings, to not set up a situation to where I can never confront poor performance or inappropriate behavior when I see it.
And I love making analogies, but I think there's so many things in life that are just like a marriage or like a good relationship, and that, you know, you're going to have a conflict. You're going to have the absence of trust at times. You're going to have a lack of commitment. You're going to have the avoidance of accountability. You're going to have all those five things. And really, over the course of time, you find out that if, in fact, you do have some type of conflict or a fear or a lack of accountability, and then you can get through it and fix it and come out the other side, it makes your business even stronger, right?
Oh, no doubt. And I would say probably I would skip by a lack of commitment. I mean, not that that's not important, but in my own personal journey, I would just talk about the avoidance of accountability. Nothing can be more discouraging. I've been on both ends of this. Nothing can be more discouraging than when you're busting your ass every day and you're giving everything you can to the company. And if your boss called you at home or just ask you, you're the person that stays late. You're the person that'll come in on the weekend. You're the person that does whatever needs to be because you care about the organization, you care about the team, you care about those that are serving. And then to come find out that you're kind of evaluated the same, you're treated the same, and as people who are not nearly as invested as you are. And maybe perhaps somebody else beats you out for a promotion or somebody gets a better evaluation. And so you're saying, wait a minute, this person is not hitting their benchmarks. Why aren't they getting, well, there's no accountability in their life. Why is poor performance tolerated? And it could be, and I've been in situations to where, especially going back to the military, that, hey, our personalities were clicking, right? So it's easy to manage people, especially when your personalities click, but they were poor performers. So that's really tough when you really like somebody. When you really like a man or a woman who's your employee, but they're just a screw up or they're not meeting the standard like everybody else, have to drill down and address them. But if you avoid it, you don't realize it is a rot that you're setting through the organization that ends up that undermines everything else you've done. It chips away at your trust. It increases fear of conflict, all of that that goes, you'll just undermine from the top down everything you're trying to build in your organization. If you do not address failure, if you do not address poor performance, and you do not hold people accountable to operate at a certain standard.
He's the CEO of course, the Montgomery Food Bank, MAFB.org. We have a few minutes here. I'm going to put you on the spot and ask you a question. Hopefully you'll have a fantastic answer. Michael Coleman joins us right here on Mission Minded. You can hear the show at least 5 days a week here on the TKR app. Tony Curry Radio on Android, TKR, of course, on Apple, and wherever you get your favorite podcast. So one of the reasons this book was written, The Five Dysfunctions of a Team, because the issues described were considered especially important to team sports. Can you remember the last time you used a sports analogy in a business environment? And can you tell me what that analogy was?
Probably was, and this is just off the top of my head. I wasn't prepared for this, but that's okay. I've used a baseball analogy that when you're thinking strategically and all that, I kind of looked at it as, you know, sometimes you take a base on balls or sometimes you have a bloop single and sometimes you hit the line drive right at somebody. I mean, sometimes you hit a home run, but every swing of the bat's not going to produce something great. And so being out there on the field, if you're looking at it from that perspective, hey, we're out there, we're all trying really hard. And sometimes we do everything right, but it's an out.
Yeah.
And sometimes you're like, eek, and you hit a bloop single. And I said, but, you know, we're out there, you know, advancing the cause, and that's part of it. You're going to have some great wins. You're going to have some bad losses or some tough losses. But we just continue to go out there and swing every day. I think, and of course, I always use the old one I fall back on, which is just simply about, I ask people, you know, did you push the ball down the field today? It doesn't matter. Sometimes, you know, those 2 yard carries sometimes can be very important, especially if you were looking at you pitch it back to the tailback and you think he's going to be sacked for a 5 yard loss, but he squeezes out 2 or 3 yards. Boy, that makes it much easier to get the first down on the next play. And what I look at every day is I just tell people, hey, we're all here carrying the ball and we're just trying to get it down the field. And everybody's not going to score a touchdown every time it gets put in their hands. But, you know, we're chipping away. We're trying to get the first downs. We're moving the ball towards our goal every day. And, there's all sorts that you can come
very,
up with.
Very, very good, my man. And if you go back and listen to our former shows, you also used a pitch clock analogy just a couple
right,
of shows
sure
ago.
Did.
So I was thinking maybe you're going to go that route, but you went back a little further. I knew you'd have an answer. I knew you'd have an answer. You know, I never put you on the spot if I know you don't have something back in your bag of tricks back there. Hey, Mike, great stuff. Tell people how they can get in touch with you. And we talked about just the wonderful work you do and through your incredible staff. I know your role players just are wonderful and they do incredible work down to the Montgomery Food Bank. How people can help you?
Yeah, just go out to your local food bank. You reach out on LinkedIn. If there's anything I can help anybody with, answer any direct questions, you can find me very easily on LinkedIn or mafb.org. And you can, my email's on there. You can reach out to me directly. But again, I'm a big food bank believer in helping your community. So reach out to your local food bank and get involved, volunteer, support them financially, whatever you are able to do. Yeah, make a difference with them and just help them because they are making a difference in your community for your neighbors.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.